This episode of Beyond the Uniform is sponsored by Warfighter Hemp, whose mission is to provide our nation's veterans with organic, non-addictive, non-psychoactive means to manage pain, lower anxiety, and improve the overall quality of their lives. 50% of Warfighter Hemp's profits go back to veterans. In episode number 218, I spoke with Warfighter Hemp's founder, Steve, and since then, I've been a fan of both their company and their products. Warfighter Hemp is offering Beyond the Uniform listeners 20% off their first purchase using the promo code BTU20 at checkout. That's BTU20. Thanks and enjoy today's episode. Welcome back to Beyond the Uniform. I'm Justin Nasiri, and my goal is to help military veterans and their families succeed in their post-service civilian career. Today's episode number 303 with Richard Porter.
It's like you're climbing up a mountain in the fog, and you can't really see where the next turn or the next step is going to go. But when you look back on where you've been, it's like the fog lifts, and you see exactly what path it is that you followed. So looking back on it, I can tell you how it appears. And that is, you know, I studied how people get along with each other and interact with each other, political science and history in undergrad. I loved the Constitution for the framework it provided for how people can get along with each other. I swore to support and defend it. I added this baseline of force undergirding the words and written and spoken words that I'd studied. And I learned a little bit about negotiation and product management, actually, without realizing I was doing it in the military. Then I decided to add commerce to it in business school.
While the bulk of this interview is about product management, Richard and I cover a lot of ground that will interest you regardless of your desired career path. We talk about leadership, we talk about technology, we talk about values and how to find a career path that is uniquely aligned with your personal values. We talk about how technology may be an amoral career path, and we talk about using hypotheses to confirm or deny a career move, and how either of those, the confirmation or the denial, is equally valuable. As always at beyonduniform.org, you'll find show notes with links to everything we discuss. Richard recommends a number of books, so I wanted to point out that in the show notes, there is an offer from audible.com where you can get for free, as a Beyond the Uniform listener, a book of your choice to listen to on audiobook. Would recommend checking out some of those books that Richard recommends. You'll also find over 300 other episodes just like this one, so to be sure to check them out. With that, let's dive in to my conversation with Richard. Well, joining me today in Chapel Hill, North Carolina, my guest is Richard I. Porter. Richard, welcome to Beyond the Uniform.
Hey, thanks for having me, Justin. It's a pleasure to be here. And I just wanted to extend gratitude both to you for having me and for what you're doing, and to your listeners for taking time out of their day and spend some time listening to what we have to say, giving us their attention.
And I'll add on to that. Thank you to Matt. And Matt, apologies on your last name, either Matt Nils or Matt Niles, who suggested having Richard on the show. Grateful for the recommendation there. And for listeners, we'll cover a lot of ground in this interview, but I wanted to give you a couple tidbits about Richard. He's a product manager at IBM. He's part of their IBM Cloud API Connect Gateways team. He started out in the Marine Corps as a ground intelligence officer, where he served for 8 years. And after his time in the Marine Corps, he studied business at UNC Kennan Flagler, as well as did an internship at Amazon. And we'll cover a little bit more about his background as well. But Richard, maybe to kick things off, take us back to when you left the Marine Corps. What was that decision process like? What was that transition like? And how did you approach that?
Yeah, thanks for the question. I'm going to be more candid in this audience than I would with others. And I'm going to say that it's not about truth or untruth. It's about how much you think your audience is going to be comfortable hearing. So people less comfortable hearing this, I'll tell them I wanted to be a more active participant in deciding when and where my wife and I were going to move and live different places and have a child. And that's a very easy to understand and hear thing for everybody. But with this audience, what I'll say is, you know, I was doing a lot of soul searching and reflecting, and I joined the Marine Corps to support and defend the Constitution, to protect people and our way of life. And I found myself more and more concerned that I may not be achieving what I was trying to by doing that, and that being employed as I was with my fellow Marines, the people that I'd grown to love in places in harm's way, against goals that I didn't think was actually making my family safer. And I started thinking, you know, we hold this great lying contest of an election every 4 years, and whoever happens to win gets to employ the lethal abilities of me and my Marines. And I started asking myself, is this really what I want to be a part of? Is this really what I want to be putting my effort against? And I decided that it wasn't anymore. A lot of soul searching involved, a lot of effort and thought went into it, talked with a lot of mentors about it, and decided that even though I thought that I might be able to help serve my Marines and buffer a little bit of some of the pain that may come down from above on them, that on net, if I thought I was helping to make my organization more lethal and more effective in fighting in the world, and I thought that it wasn't being employed effectively and protecting and supporting and defending the Constitution the way I thought it should be, I needed to exit that. So I did. And I moved on to study business because I wanted to add another dimension to how I interact with the world, to the ideas and the words that we all study when we study in university. And then to the force, the basis that we all get as veterans in the military, I wanted to add commerce onto that. And so I did that in business school. So that may have been a little bit too in-depth and soul-searching an answer, but to be completely frank with you and your listeners, that was my process. And that was what drove me and my decision to part ways with the active military.
I love that. I appreciate the honesty on it. And I think a lot about purpose right now. And an analogy someone gave me is like, you know, purpose is almost like the layers of the onion, and you have a purpose that fulfills you for years, and you learn more about yourself, you learn more about that, and you kind of uncover a deeper purpose and deeper and deeper and deeper. And I'm curious, you know, you said soul searching. What recommendation, like, was there anything that you did that really helped with that? Was it journaling or talking to friends or just to get tactical on that? Because I imagine no matter what someone does, they're going to have to go through that process. So what tidbits would you leave with people about what helped you in that process?
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head when you said talking with friends about it. I think it's so valuable to have people that you trust and you can really be vulnerable with and talk about what you're thinking, what you're feeling. And I think every veteran is going to have someone like that. You're going to have a buddy, you're going to have a peer, you're going to have a senior mentor, maybe. You're going to have somebody that, ideally at this point, you'll have somebody that's on the outside that you can have that trust and rapport with also. So you can talk to somebody on the inside, someone on the outside, put those together and think about the different paths that could be facing you. Also tactically, I did a worksheet from Richard N. Bowles, Dick Bowles, called What Color's Your Parachute? And just a really good methodology of self-reflection mechanically of what things do I like doing? What does that imply about what I might want to do next for career changers and things like that? And I found that pretty helpful at the time. With the benefit of hindsight, and just in case we don't have a meandering course of our conversation to come back to it, I know you're a big fan of it, and I am too, the Simon Sinek Start With Why methodology and framework. So I would strongly encourage anybody who is considering a major life change, whether it be a veteran considering getting out of the military or someone who is thinking about changing careers after the military, to check out that video. Spend 15 minutes. It's a low-cost way to check out Simon's Start With Why video. If you like it, go forward and read the books and then reflect on your own personal why. Do the work to figure out what it is that's driving you and why you're doing what you're doing. And I think that could be that's what the advice I would have given myself while I was still in, if I could have.
That's great. And for listeners, in addition to adding links in the show notes to both of those books, I'll also add a link to Peter Drucker, who is Simon Sinek's right-hand man. We did a podcast interview with him. And one thing I'll just kind of riff on with what you said is I love this thought of using friends as a sounding board. In my own most recent career transition, I did that, but I just wanted to share with listeners, the decision that I made was actually contrary to the opinions and advice of 90% of the people I spoke with. And the way that I kind of look at that is when you're talking to friends, it's not necessarily about, I think it's partly about the advice that they're giving you, but it's even more about like, how does that land with you? How does that resonate? How does that, you know, it's kind of like using your body as a tuning fork of like, hey, that connects, that doesn't connect. So it's not like your friends have the answer. It's just kind of adding more data to the mix, blending it up, and then ultimately seeing where you want to uniquely go, even if that's contrary to that advice.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, man, there's so many ways to go with this, but let me start with you are walking down the street over in North Carolina. You bump into someone who served in the military and they say, "What on earth do you do for a living, Richard?" How do you answer that?
Good question. Yeah, so product managers have a fun challenge in describing what it is they do. And there was a Medium post I was commenting on a while back that that I tried to summarize this in three different ways. And one of them is, in one word, negotiate. I negotiate. If I were to put it like a Broadway musical, I'd say I am the very model of a modern middle manager. And then if I were to get into more depth and I were to spend a little bit more time, I'd say I sit at the middle of what needs to be done to create a product. And that involves coordinating and co-developing with the software engineers, the developers that actually build the product itself, helping to understand more deeply the pain points of the user. And honestly, I really should have started with that, because that is the most important thing that I ever get to do, is talk with users and understand what is their pain point that we can solve. What is the job to be done in their life that they are hiring my product to do? And are we meeting that? Or how could we meet it better? Or how could we meet it in such a way that they would hire us or pay us more? You got to coordinate with marketing to make sure that the positioning of the product is fitting well within the market with the segments that you're trying to serve. And you have to talk to legal to make sure that you're dotting all your I's and crossing all your T's and following the right rules with licensing and with the statements that you're making. And you got to talk with sales to make sure they understand how it needs to be sold, but also so you can hear the feedback from the people who are actually trying to make the sale. You got to talk with tech sales who actually understands, or sales engineers as they're called in some organizations, so that you're talking with someone with a little bit more technical depth that's talking to the more technical parts of the organization. You got to make sure you're in contact with support so that you understand all the problems that people are having with the software, with the product. Make sure that they understand the latest feature updates, the new items that you've delivered, and you're getting that feedback yet again. So when I said that you're the middle, I really meant it. Like, you are the connecting file in between all of these, and it's your job as a product manager to be able to be educated enough to know enough about each item that you can represent whoever's not at the table at that moment. So if engineering's not there, I have to know enough about the engineering to be able to advocate for them and to emphasize their point of view. And if design isn't in the room, I can't believe I forgot design. You got to make sure to be able to represent what design thinks is most important at that moment. And you know, the one entity that's almost never at the table is the customer, is the user. And if you're a really good product manager, maybe you do bring them to the table from time to time, but most of the time they're not going to be there. So you're always representing them. So it's your job to know a little bit about a lot of things and to represent whoever isn't in the conversation at that moment. Does that kind of help to describe?
Oh yeah, I love that. I mean, I love that thought of the negotiation. And just to recap, it sounds like you're at this epicenter of marketing, the customer, legal, sales, engineering, design. Like, there's all of these different groups, and you have to understand each of them. You have to communicate with each of them. You have to bring all of those different inputs together to come up with one path forward. And I want to ask another question, which is, okay, you spent 8 years in the Marine Corps doing ground intelligence officer. Help me understand, like, how does that prepare you for product manager or abstracting this? Is this something that's well suited to people who've served in the military?
Yeah, I think it absolutely is. And I really appreciate you asking the question, because I think it's one that's real important for this audience to hear. So all military members learn how to do this, learn how to lead through influence, learn how to integrate lots of different points of views and to come up with a path forward that's practical for many people. I would argue that in particular, people who've been involved in counterinsurgency understand this very well, because at its core, counterinsurgency is about providing a product called security to a population. And so when I was in business school, I started reflecting on this, and then I did so more since I've joined a tech company, to think about, you know, it's our job to understand the competition, aka the enemy, the adversary. It's our job to understand our own capability within our organization. What are we good at? What are we not good at? It's our job to understand the external effects that the other areas may have on this, whether that is the weather, whether that is the market, whether that is trends. And then most importantly, to understand the population or your consumer or user and what their needs are, and to be able to articulate all this to a decision maker, a commander in the military, or an executive making decisions about funding and paths forward in a software product. And after you've been able to outline this and you've got a path forward and you're executing on that, being able to communicate that back again to all of those different stakeholders, including most critically the users or the population. Here's how we meet your needs better than the adversary, better than the enemy, better than the competition. Here's why we are working so hard with you to develop something that's useful to you. And here's why we think it's going to be so useful to you. This is something we've all practiced already. So I think it's something that veterans are very well suited to. And I hope to help other veterans realize that they have these skills that can already be valuable. And I want to also try and help technology companies better understand the value that veterans can bring from their deep wealth of experience in these transferable areas.
I love that. And for listeners, I think it's great to hear how Richard took his experience and translated it to show, like, I've been doing this for 8 years. I know that it sounds like I've been on the ground running around with a gun. And yes, that may be true. And this is how it's applicable. And I've actually used this in my consulting work when I did some product management work. I actually pulled out for myself, my background is submarines. And so I said, hey, you know, at periscope depth, it's a very dangerous operation. And I told them the story of how sonar was telling me I needed to go one way and radio was telling me I needed to go another way. And our dive officer was saying we had to go a different direction and navigation was saying we had to go a different direction. And so coordinating with all of these disparate parts to come up with one cohesive direction. And you can talk about your leadership in that, and you can talk about how that relates to a product management position. And I love, Richard, how you called out, you know, competition is the same as, you know, it's a very different thing as people who are fighting against us. But, you know, you kind of spoon feed for the hiring manager, like, this is what I've been doing in a crazy environment. And those stories tend to be pretty riveting because most hiring managers are not hearing those. Do you have any advice? Let me back up. How did you end up at IBM? Like, what led you to them? What made you want to work there?
Yeah, that's a good question. So I kind of told the story about how I came to decide it was time to depart the military and to go study business. I want to also emphasize that, like, as I was thinking about that, I wasn't positive what I wanted to do. I just knew that it wasn't time to continue serving in the military anymore. And retrospectively, I can tell a story that makes it sound very cohesive, and it sounds like, oh, this always made sense. And I've heard it put that, you know, you can only ever understand your path truly when you look backwards on it. When you're moving forwards, it's like you're climbing up a mountain in the fog, and you can't really see where the next turn or the next step is going to go. But when you look back on where you've been, it's like the fog lifts and you see exactly what path it is that you followed. So looking back on it, I can tell you how it appears. And that is, you know, I studied how people get along with each other and interact with each other, political science and history in undergrad. I loved the Constitution for the framework it provided for how people can get along with each other. I swore to support and defend it. I added this baseline of force undergirding words and written and spoken words that I'd studied. And I learned a little bit about negotiation and product management, actually, without realizing I was doing it in the military. Then I decided to add commerce to it in business school. And then what drew me to tech, honestly, is that I saw it as amoral rather than all the other options that, as I was looking at them, seemed immoral. And I have to be a little bit careful here because I know this is going to go to a wide audience. So I don't mean to cast disparagement on people who've made different choices. And I think it's different for every person. But as I looked at it, I found that there were many industries I could not stomach going into. I wouldn't be able to, I was at a networking event, and I'm sure you did a lot of these in B-school. Like, I walk in and I'm like, I'm kind of rusty. I'm like shaking. I've got a little nervous jitters, and I'm like, I'm going to go up to whichever table doesn't currently have someone and go practice, just talking to them. Don't care who they are. And then I'll go back around to the ones I really care about, and I'll give them my pitch for real. So I'm walking in, and I see this table of like six people that look real cool wearing t-shirts instead of suits. And I'm like, oh, why is no one talking to them? And as I walk up, I see Reynolds America on their shirt. And for listeners who don't know, that's a tobacco company. And my wife is a survivor of skin cancer, not the same kind, but cancer. And I asked myself in split seconds, calculating in my head, is there an amount of money that Reynolds America could pay me to work for them and knowingly give cancer to my customers? And the answer is no, they couldn't pay me any amount of money to do that. Well, that line of thinking continued. And I started doing this ethical triage of, okay, could I go work for a Coca-Cola or a PepsiCo and sell sugar water to children with neuroprogramming through advertising that encourages them to consume more of an addictive substance than they should and leads to diabetes? Yeah, no, I don't think I could do that either. Could I go work in for Exxon, when I know ExxonMobil has been spending a lot of money to try and suppress climate science in order to keep selling more and more of their carbon-based fuel while they try to get their renewables up and online. And until then, they're trying to suppress this science. No, I couldn't. So for me, it was really kind of this process of elimination that led me to technology. And a part of that was saying, you know, there are solutions that can be provided here. Yes, there are some darker sides of tech, and there's some bad things here. There's also some good things, and really technology just makes people more efficient at what they were going to do anyway. And that's what really drew me into tech. I've been talking a lot now, but if you want, we can jump and talk a little bit more about Amazon before IBM, or happy
to take whichever direction. Let me pause there, because I love what you're saying. I want to point out for listeners two things that really resonate with me. One is, I love that thought. I hadn't heard that quote before, but this... I love both your honesty and then this reflection that the journey leading to where you were, you can tell the story in retrospect, but you didn't know that at the outset. And I would conjecture that that's true for 95% of the guests on this show. And I think oftentimes we lose sight of that, and we kind of tell ourselves and others the story of like, I knew I was going to go from A to B and I did that. But I think that the truth is it's kind of taking a few steps, reevaluating, taking a few steps. And I hope that gives listeners a little bit of ease about not needing to know the final destination, just kind of being able to meander a little bit and be okay with that. And then the second thing that I'm sure for listeners this comes through, but Richard has got a very clear sense of his values. And those values may differ from you, but what I want to point out is the power. If you have, you know, I don't imagine, Richard, it came easy to understand these values and really come clear with them. But when you do that soul searching, when you uncover them, that is such an incredible asset, because it makes what could be incredibly difficult decisions much simpler. Reynolds is not aligned with my value. Therefore, it doesn't matter how much money they would give me. It's one less conversation, one less decision. It's a door that you can close. And I think that that's really great for listeners to know, of like whether, you know, to understand what your values are. What is it that you're fighting for when you take off the uniform? What is it that you want to put as paramount and you're not going to compromise on? And the degree to which I know that a lot of people like to think that more options is better, that being a Swiss Army knife, that I'll go anywhere and do anything, it makes it easier. It makes it so much more difficult to figure out what you want to do. So I love that. What was it that drew you to Amazon then?
Sure. Yeah. I will come right back to that. I want to put one more emphasis on something you said, which was, we've both talked a little bit about Simon Sinek, and I love the emphasis he makes about, and start with why, when you are talking about something you believe, you can have immediate rapport, and you can also immediately dismiss something. And that can be leveraged both in job search for veterans, but also in product management. One of the mistakes I see some of my colleagues making, or some of the senior executives making, is they want everyone to be a customer. They want every single person. And I think that that's a mistake. Just like it's a mistake to try and work for every company, it's a mistake to try and serve every person. Because if someone does not believe what you believe, then they should go find someone that does believe what they believe in order to work better with them. So the way I prefer to deal with competition is to say, hey, here's what we believe on my product. And if you don't believe that, that's fine. We have lots of great competitors out there that may align better with your beliefs. But if you believe this, or if you believe something close to it, we'd love to talk and maybe we can help you out. So I think that's a good framework to use both for a product manager and as a veteran looking for a business. I think it really is, it's one of those base layers that can be useful so many different places.
And I'll just throw in a quick anecdote there because I love what you're saying. Yesterday, I work with an executive coach. I highly recommend people use a coach as a sounding board. One of the topics I was covering yesterday is I said, hey, for Beyond the Uniform, we have this value where we don't want to charge veterans. We want to keep this free, and yet we need to make money. And so I was talking with him. I'm like, man, I'm thinking of these different things, and some of them don't, they just don't sit well with me. Other ones excite me. And what I liked about this process is I started talking about a couple of partnerships, and he was able to kind of stop me and say, like, hey, you seem excited. You seem energized. You seem like this is in alignment with who you are. That, you know, of the five things you just said, this one seems like the one that's really in alignment for you. And I think that whether it's friends or a coach, they can pick up on things that, you know, when me, I was just venting. I wasn't really even thinking about what I was saying. And he was a sounding board to be able to say, like, man, this piece really strikes true. Like, I can tell by how energized you are that this is a mission that really connects with the core of who you are. And that's what came up with me, Richard, when you're talking, is like, man, if you start to talk about, in your case, a product, or if you start to talk about a company or a why, and that gets you going and people can sense that energy, not only is that a good indication that that'll be good for you, but man, you're going to be so much more effective in sales, product management, whatever it is you're doing, because it's lined with who you are as a person.
Yeah, absolutely. And I will get back to Amazon, but one last point that popped in my mind when you were saying that, I recently did some interviewing, both internally and externally. For the moment, I'm going to be staying with IBM and moving on to a new role. I'm excited about it. But, you know, after doing this why discovery, I listened to your interview with Peter Drucker, who's Drucker, right, the other day. And that's in addition to having read the book, the Find Your Why After Start With Why. I found that the best thing to do in any interview is to tell them your why. Is no matter what question they ask, if they say, tell me about yourself, if they say, why do you want to work for my company? If they say, you know, any sort of opener can be met with, I'd love to answer that. Let me tell you why I get out of bed every morning. Mm-hmm. I get out of bed every morning driven by a personal mission to learn and teach so that others can survive and thrive through better understanding knowledge. And I see this company, this opportunity, this possibility as in alignment with that. And here's why I see that. That's why I'm talking to you today. Or that's my background. That has proved so compelling in the vast majority of the interviews that I've had recently. And it just cuts to the quick of who you are and what you're doing talking to this person in the first place. Now if you want, I will get back to Amazon.
I'll just say I love that. I just think that there's I feel a power in that of and you said that statement, it rolled off your tongue. I'm sure that's because you spent so much time crafting it and practicing it. But the there's some great quote here, but it's like the battle is won before it's even fought. And you know, like that what I'm seeing, Richard, is like you have fought that battle. You have crystallized your purpose. And it seems to me it's like without judgment. It's like, look, this is where I'm going. And if this seems, you know, this seems to be in line with that. And if so, great. If not, let's save ourselves some time. If that doesn't connect with your organization, it's not going to be good for me or for you to hire me. And I just think back to all the times in both dating and in job search where I was just trying to pitch myself as the ideal candidate for everyone. And that just wastes everyone time versus doing the heavy lifting to understand your unique mission and how that fits in with this company.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And when I interviewed for my internship with Amazon, I had not yet done that work. Mm-hmm. And it's not that I wouldn't necessarily have gone to join them or to have an internship with them if I had. It's not that I wouldn't, but I hadn't yet. So what drove me to go to Amazon instead of being driven by this mission that I had articulated was something simpler, more back to that idea of just trying to figure things out. I was looking for an opportunity to learn. I was looking for the company, the organization with which I thought I would learn the most, the fastest. And the field of product management, as I knew at the time, was going to be in the middle of everything, was going to have to learn a little bit about a lot of things, was going to force me to get up to speed quickly on technology that I didn't understand yet as a veteran, to bring my newly found business skills to bear, to try and be the business expert, although not yet an expert, and to learn from the technology experts. And Amazon struck me as a great place to do that. And it was. It was a fantastic time to be with a mission-driven company. Amazon is a mission-driven company, to be the most customer-focused organization on the face of the planet. And they follow through on that. They have the 12 leadership principles that they swear by, that they interview by, that they evaluate by, and those are real. And they all end up serving customer obsession. The opportunity to learn was fantastic. The ability to practice was very useful. And I'll add one more thing that I brought from my veteran time in my selection of Amazon as compared to the other opportunities I had for internships with kind of technology related things was, as intel officers in the military, and probably anybody who's ever been tasked to understand something in the military will understand, it's not just about confirming something, it's about confirm or deny. And if you're confirming or denying something, that gives you a lot of latitude. So as I was evaluating these internship opportunities, I thought, which of these allows me to test the most hypotheses, confirm or deny the most ideas? And Amazon was that. It was, number one, do I like living on the West Coast? Number two, do I like living in a big city? Number three, do I like living a 6-hour flight away from family? Number four, can I tolerate a city with not a lot of sunshine? Number five, do I want to work in big tech? Number six, do I want to work in a mission-driven company? Number seven, do I want to work in a company with a reputation for being as driven and hard-charging as Amazon is? And I was able to, through this internship, go through and confirm and deny these hypotheses and realize what I wanted to move towards more. And that helped me to make the decision afterwards, although I was fortunate to get an offer to come back with Amazon, to decide that wasn't the right fit for the time, that I wanted to live nearer to family. My wife's family is all from North Carolina. I wanted to stay in technology because I really enjoyed working as a product manager and in the technology industry. And so IBM was that opportunity to do that. And now we have finally, 30 minutes in, gotten to why I joined IBM.
Now, I think that's great, though. I think I can imagine that hypothesis approach is helpful as a product manager as well. But I can think as well for me of places that I've worked where it was like that. It was like, let me choose the option that gives me most access to information. And I love how explicit you are in the things that you're trying to prove or disprove. And what I love about your calling it out as confirm or deny, I think my mind usually goes towards confirm. And if I don't confirm, then it's a failure. And I love that because it's like the sense of, if you deny the hypothesis, if you disprove it, that is just as valuable as proving it. Or I'll put in the show notes, Andy Chan, who was the Stanford career counselor. I had him on the show. He talks about closing doors. I think about this all the time. It's like, if you do an internship and you close a door on a company, an industry, a functional role, a geographic area, closing that door is just as valuable as realizing this is where you want to go. And again, I think that takes the pressure off. It's not about finding the 100% fit. It's about getting as much information as possible so that in your next internship and your next job and your next whatever, you can go a little bit deeper. You can figure out and narrow in on what you want to do. And one last thing, and this is a little bit more of a personal self-expression. I kind of wish that, I think I left the military at age 27. I wish that I had treated my 20s and still in my 30s, but most of my 30s, rather than let me just figure it out and go for it, I wish I would have given myself a decade to kind of explore and just kind of figure it out. And the advice I got from one of the prominent professors at business school was, you make most of your money between age 50 and 60, or maybe it was 40 and 50. I always mess this up. Let's just say 40 and 50. You make most of your money between age 40 and 50, and everything else is setting yourself up so that when you hit 40, you just crush it. And what I love about that, particularly if you're 25 or 23, you're listening to this, is relax. You've got 15 years to find your way to what you want to do to really thrive in that zone. You don't have to rush to get it right away.
Absolutely. And if we're not showing the video, if this is just audio, you might not see, but I like jumped all over and smiled and pointed when Justin said that, because I was actually thinking that was going to be my next point. We must have listened to the same professor, because to me, that's a freeing thought. You're not actually at the moment, right? You're not at actions on objective yet. Right now, you are still on your infiltrate phase or your insert phase. This is not the moment to make your major mark. And maybe it is, and maybe you are statistically above the norm and you're making your big impact now, but probably not, because even the people that are having outrageous, outsized impacts on the world, the Jeff Bezoses, the Mark Zuckerbergs, the people like that, you know, they may have gotten a really cool early start ahead of their peers, but they're still going to make the majority of their money, the majority of their impact, the majority of the change on the world that they're going to make in those decades, somewhere between 40 and 60, somewhere in there. That's when it's going to happen. And everything before that is about setting yourself up, having the right knowledge, learning the right things, knowing the right people, having the right relationships and thinking processes to really maximize that zone when you can really make that impact, whether that impact be financial, whether it be changing the world, whether it be making the world better for other people, whatever it is that is your why, that's going to happen later. And I found chatting with a colleague of mine who's actually sitting right outside this phone booth right now. He was feeling kind of frustrated. And, you know, one thing I love about veterans, and you need to be able to humbly tell people about this. You are going to mentor people. It's going to happen. It's who you are. You were brought up in this culture where it's your job to mentor and lead people. It's just going to happen. And if that's not in alignment with what a company wants, it may not be productive. But anyhow, just because this is who we are and what we do, I was talking with this young man who's, you know, he's not that young. He's 10 years younger than me. And if we could all go back and tell each other, there's chances when we can go back and tell people that are like us, listen, man, I know you're disappointed right now. I know you're frustrated. It's okay. You're just learning. All you're doing now is meeting the right people, learning the right skills, learning the right frameworks, because you're going to have all your impact in your 40s through your 60s. It's okay to take a breath, take a step back, and to recognize this is all about learning things. So that really resonates very powerfully for me.
That's great. What about with the product manager position? Well, first of all, I don't want to say like, is an MBA necessary, but let's just say someone's on active duty. They're fired up about product management. They think that this is the direction they want to go. It sounds like some component of business school for you was figuring out what you want to do. So let's cut that out and say that they know they want to go into product management. Could you give maybe the pros and cons of like trying to go directly from the military to a product management position, if that's even possible, versus going to get experience or a degree? Like, what are the paths for them to get there?
Yeah, that is hard to separate, and I appreciate your point about it. So if I were talking to someone who is actively in the military, they know they want to be a product manager, I won't tell anyone not to do anything. Try it, confirm or deny your hypotheses, by all means. But I will tell you that it will probably be more challenging to do it directly by a direct route rather than by, you know, flanking, by going in an end around. And here's why I think that. Most product manager hiring managers are looking for you to be an expert in something. You don't have to be an expert in everything. They recognize you're going to be a generalist, but you have to be like T-shaped. You have to have, you know, broad experience, but one depth. And you can sell the depth of leadership as a veteran, and you should, but many hiring managers aren't going to hear that. Not well. And not even after, I mean, I just told you, I've been doing some interviewing. I spent 2 years being a product manager. They still don't want to hear about leadership because they still view what I'm being hired for as an individual contributor role, not yet directly authoritatively managing people. So you got to be an expert in something. So the question is, are you going to be an expert in the technology that you're a product manager for? Are you going to be an expert in the business side of the technology you're going to be a product manager for? Or are you going to be an expert in the design? The design thinking methodology and what users need, or maybe subject matter expertise. If you are already an expert in one of those, you may have a path to enter into it directly right now. If you don't, business school is a way to become an expert in the business side and thereby have one of these depths that you can offer, or a story you can tell about it at least. That would be my advice. My advice would be, you know, if you think you can, go for it. Reflect on what your downstroke of your T is. What is your expertise that you're going to tell that hiring manager is all about?
And I think it's good for listeners to note that even with an MBA, even with 2 years there, Richard is not yet, you know, considered a leader. I think that's one of the misconceptions most of us have in the military is like, hey, I've built up all of this career capital and leadership and management, therefore I'm going to employ that. I think if you directly move into an adjacent industry, like defense contracting, something like that, that is possible. But if you move away, as Richard did, into something more, you know, further away from the military, in his case, software, you're going to have to build up more career capital in that area before you can bring to bear the leadership career capital. But if we zoom out on a longer view of a career, great. You spent 8 years building up leadership. That's not going away. Now build up some product management career capital. Great. Maybe you realize there's another skill you need. Maybe, you know, 3 years from now, Richard and I are talking, he realized he needed experience in finance. So he builds that up. And then he, you know, builds up experience directly in marketing. And then maybe he starts his own company with all of these different components. It's kind of the skills game right now. It's just building up all the tools so that when he wants to construct the house, he's got some really well-defined power tools that he can bring to bear.
Yep, absolutely right. And I, as you mentioned, I'm not being viewed as a formal positional leader. Everybody is an informal leader. Everybody was in the military. Everybody will continue to be. But I also want to point out that this is something that I notice many veterans get disappointed by, get frustrated by, and you should go into it with open eyes. You should recognize that you have leadership experience above and beyond what your civilian peers will have. That is a fact. But it is also something that the hiring managers will not recognize well, and often will not value the way that you do or understand. I've been shocked to reflect on the fact that, you know, I have a buddy here who's a veteran also, who's a fellow product manager, and I've been managing product for 2 years. He's been doing it for 3 years, and we have positional managers in our organization that have been managing people for 2 to 3 years, but have been managing product for about 8 to 10 years. And I realized we're inverses of each other. Mm-hmm. We're literal exact inverses. And one thing that we as veterans can and should do is be humble and ask questions about how to manage product and rely on this deep experience of these people that are given positional management authority. But you need to have some empathy and recognize that they don't have the leadership experience you do. They don't understand people the way that you do. They may not even think to ask you about any ideas you might have about how the team could run better or about how to lead people. People don't realize that my buddy, he was an Air Force maintenance officer. He had positional authority over 250 airmen. Mm-hmm. Like, how do our managers not know that? That's crazy talk. How mm-hmm. do you not know your people enough to know where their strengths and their weaknesses lie, where they may be able to benefit from learning something from you? Recognize that you're stepping into a world where this is the case, where there is no such thing as an officership position where you can come in to be a generalist, but also a specialist in leading people. Instead, you're expected to have this functional expertise, and by that functional expertise, work yourself into a generalist position of leading people. So it can be very advantageous to know this going into it, and to humbly and reflectively look for ways that you can lead through influence and help educate some of your managers even about effective ways to lead teams, about ways that are helpful for knowing your people and developing them and employing them in accordance with their abilities. Mm-hmm. It's a delicate thing to do, but I trust that many of my fellow veterans will have that tact to be able to help their teammates and help their managers with that.
What about, there's a couple side shoots on product for you. So you're a guest presenter at Product School. You're going to be doing an upcoming webinar series. And you also have a site where you're collecting lessons right now called theartofproductwar.com. What would you want listeners to know about either or both of these?
Thank you so much for asking that question. Yeah, I exactly the things we've been talking about, leadership and how important it is in technology. I was thinking about this, and as a part of some of the recruiting process, I started writing some articles for Product Craft, which is a website about managing product and the craft of product management. And I started thinking, you know, there's a lot of lessons that veterans can bring to bear into the world of product management and to technology products. And I started to realize I'm certainly not special enough to have all the insights. I have these three articles that I've written about, you know, the basics of leadership, setting the example, outlining the mission, knowing your people and employing them in accordance with their abilities, viewing the competition through a lens of understanding competitive intelligence and meeting needs better than the competition does. And these sorts of ideas that I had, and I started writing down these blogs, I started to realize, you know, there's a lot of other veterans that can really give a lot of great lessons for other product leaders. And I wanted to try and do that in one time and place. And so that's what the Art of Product War is about. It's a place that kind of like the Art of War and the Art of Product War is a way of thinking about veterans who also have experience in product management, showing veterans that they have something to offer the world of product, and showing the world of product that veterans have something to offer in terms of ideas, frameworks, and thinking methods that could be useful. So that's what that is, and that's what I'm passionate about right now, is trying to illustrate that value. And you know, we have such a need for leadership in technology. You look at some of the excesses of technology and ethical failings that they may be having that we're seeing in the news. Facebook comes to mind. Sometimes Google, some of the others pop up. And it's not that veterans will 100% of the time make the right choice, but the fact that I have a buddy who works at Facebook in security makes me feel a little bit better. And I'd like more of him to be there, because we have this rigorous training in ethics and in leading people, and we can bring that right away. And so I want to try and help people understand that and make that connection, so that maybe we can get more veterans involved in technology products and software development, so that we can get people who have been trained both in leading people and outlining missions and visions, setting the example, and in thinking ethically about what the right thing to do is. That's what that's all about. And I really appreciate you bringing it up so that I can mention it to your listeners.
So I think that's great. I'll put a link there for your three articles, as well as the Art of Product War. I love that as a resource for someone interested. It seems like a great way to dive in more and see people with similar backgrounds to you and how they've approached product. I think that's beautiful. And then I love the, what you said about Facebook. I appreciate back in the single or double digit episodes of Beyond the Uniform, I talked to Emily at New Politic, and her thing was, look, I want military veterans, I want people who are in the Peace Corps, I want anyone who's served in some capacity, I want them in politics. I don't care red, blue, green, I don't care what party they are, I just want these people serving in politics. And what you're saying resonates in that vein of like, man, I don't know anything about the people listening to this show other than that they put on a uniform and they swore an oath. And that's kind of a lot to know about someone. And so I love the thought of inserting them in different organizations, because it's like, you know, I have mixed feelings on Facebook, but it's like, man, if someone from the military was there, I would sleep a little bit more at night, because I know they've got an ethical compass. I know that they have the intention to do what's right for the people of this country. And I don't even know what that looks like, honestly. It's such a complex issue, but I trust that them in that position, they're going to try to do the right thing. And that's at least a nudge in the right direction. So I think that's really great that you're pointing that out.
Absolutely. Yeah. Thank you. I hope that anybody who hears this and feels interested by it will check it out. And, please feel free to contact me, connect with me through that website or through any of the social media channels in which you can find me. I'd love to help with that conversation, with that thought process, because the more veterans we can get involved in technology, where decisions you make scale to the thousands, to the millions, potentially to the billions, where you get to help influence the direction that that something gets written into code and deployed over and over again and served to people at scale, the more people we can get in there that have this ability to think through things, to set a mission and a vision, and to be trained in ethical decision-making, the better that we can make the world through that impact.
I love that. And I love that you're alluding to that outsized impact that someone can have through software, that they can really push a button and impact hundreds of millions of people. It's exciting. I know we only have a few minutes left. I always want to just kind of make space for anything we didn't cover that you want to share with listeners, or any kind of parting words of wisdom that you'd like to leave them with.
Yeah, absolutely. The conversation went directly where I wanted it to here at the end, and so I really appreciate that opportunity. I guess I would just say that it's going to be hard. The transition is going to be hard, but you're up to it. You're equal to this task. You're a badass. You've been through so much more than other people have, and I ain't going to sugarcoat it. It's going to be difficult. There's going to be things you didn't anticipate. The best way to know about it and to reduce uncertainty is to talk to people And I really liked, Justin, what you said in an earlier interview about, you know, talking with someone who's where you want to be, maybe a step or two ahead of you. If you're going to B school, talk to someone at the B school. If you're in B school looking at the industry, talk to someone in the industry. If you want to look a couple years out, you want to treat it almost like land map, where you you shoot a bearing and then you put away your compass and your map and you go to that bearing. You're not looking at the compass and the map as you're walking. You shoot a bearing, you get your direction, you go for a couple years and you check in with someone who's already there maybe. So I would say you don't have to know all the answers now. You just need to be going in the right direction.
I love it. Well, thank you so much. We'll add a bunch of information to the show notes for this, but thank you for your time today.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for your time also, Justin.
Thank you so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Quick couple admin points. We release brand new episodes every single Monday and Thursday. Those are usually recorded about a month or so before they go live. Every Monday and Thursday, we have an interview, usually almost always with a military veteran about their civilian career. More and more, we're starting to add in experts who may not be veterans, but may have some expertise that will help the military veteran community. Saturdays, I typically post more of a behind the scenes episode, which is a free form format. I try to use what I'm calling a mullet format. And by that, I mean business up front, party in the back, talking through admin points, professional topics related to the podcast. It might be a conversation I had that week. It might have been an interview I had that week, but just trying to share things that are top of mind that may help you in more of a free form, straight from the heart format. And then the party in the back is the personal side of things, just kind of more free flowing thoughts on life, on improving oneself, just kind of whatever's going on in life and trying to be authentic and honest about those things as well. Special thanks. We have an all volunteer army of people behind Beyond the Uniform making this possible. We do this on our lunch breaks, on our evenings, on our weekends, because we love the military community. We want to give back. We want to make a difference. We want that as part of the purpose in our life that we valued in the military. So special thanks to Steve Bain. Steve does pretty much everything. He helps secure guests. He does our newsletter. He keeps the reels rolling and keeps me sane. Kathleen Dillon, the first person to join our team. She writes text transcripts of every single episode. It's wild. She keeps up with two of these a week despite a demanding career and education right now. But those transcripts help us get more SEO value, helps her audience more. Andrew Woolridge is our data guru. He helps us understand the numbers, which is the easiest way for us to figure out how we can better support you, and adds kind of the data oversight for that. Rick Healy does all of our social media. He is gaining more and more of an audience for us by getting our videos, getting our podcasts out on social channels. The best way to stay in contact with us is if you go to beyondtheuniform.org, there is a newsletter. You'll have a little pop-up that comes up. You can put your email in. We email twice per month. We try to be respectful, but it is a great way to get appraised of upcoming events, upcoming interviews, promos where companies are giving discounts to Beyond the Uniform listeners, and more. This does cost money to put on. We are committed to not charging veterans directly, and the way that we kind of offset costs is through corporate sponsors. So if you know of a company that would like to get in front of a military audience and their families, that's one way that we can both add value to our members, but also offset the costs of Beyond the Uniform and give us a little bit of budget to start expanding what we're doing. So that's the best way you can help us. If that's not something that you can do, a positive review on iTunes is greatly appreciated. Have a wonderful week. We will be back Monday, Thursday, and Saturday with more interviews. And keep up the listening. Take care.